is Friday, October the 6th. This is VOA's International Edition. Many thanks for joining us. Coming up, latest on the massacre of a music festival in the U.S. city of Las Vegas, President Trump to decertify nuclear deal with Iran.
President Trump is playing a very dangerous game. Withholding certification is extremely risky, in part because Iran is complying with its commitments under the nuclear deal.
The Turkish leader warning the border with the Iraqi Kurdistan could be closed, plus Vegas shooting impact on musicians. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. Law enforcement officials are saying that before carrying out the worst mass shooting in recent U.S. history, Stephen Paddock rented hotel rooms overlooking other music festivals in Las Vegas as well as in Chicago, but it was from the room he rented in Las Vegas he attacked a country music festival late on Sunday. Hotel employees in Las Vegas Mandalay Resort said Paddock had specifically requested an upper floor room with a view of the music festival. It was from there he shot and killed 58 people, wounded nearly 500 before killing himself. We begin our coverage with two reports from VOA correspondents on the scene in Las Vegas. Here's VOA's Carolyn Prasuti on the raw emotion there.
The famous Las Vegas Strip, now home to sacred spots, to reflect, to pray, to grieve.
He did not run. He was actually helping others.
Samantha Ross lost her cousin, Quentin Robbins, his amazing smile and generous spirit. Two of Samantha's friends also died in the Las Vegas shooting.
I'm angry. I want to scream. I want to cry. I just want to sleep. I haven't been able to sleep very much. I look at the Mandalay Bay and I want to scream. I'm glad the guy's dead.
But she's also thankful. She had tickets to the concert, but couldn't go because her children were sick. Instead, she had to explain the killing of 58 people and the maiming of nearly 500 others to her five-year-old.
A bad guy did a very bad thing, and a lot of people got hurt and killed, and I just kind of told her the truth, but in a way that a kindergartner could understand.
These men pray the 23rd Psalm, the one about walking through the valley of the shadow of death. Armando Gonzalez drove here from California.
We believe in Jesus Christ, and he say, my own peace I give you. So that's the reason we are here, because we need the peace in our heart.
Further up the strip, in a city used to policing casinos for card sharks, officers are on guard. Metal detectors at some hotels scanned customers for 2 days. Now they just search golf club bags for weapons. Still not known is how Stephen Paddock got 23 guns into his hotel room. Stacy Disney thinks about those firearms, remembering a recent talk she had with her children.
I've just taken my boys, I have two boys. And I'm always home, I hate guns. I always tell them guns can hurt people.
To most people across this country, Las Vegas is viewed as a gambling mecca and a tourist spot. It takes a tragedy like this to help people see the community behind the city and the fact that now they're all rallying behind the phrase, Vegas strong. Carolyn Prasuti, VOA News, Las Vegas, Nevada.
And days after the shooting in Las Vegas, students there are trying to get back to normal. University of Nevada at Las Vegas is just minutes away from the casinos, and the diverse student population still trying to make sense of what happened there and what can be done in the future to avoid more violence. VOA's Elizabeth Lee is in Las Vegas.
It looks just like another day on campus until students get to this plaza outside the student union.
There's a little bit less energy because of what has happened, and people are still processing as to why it happened.
This memorial reflects how the world as they know it has changed overnight.
We question now if we're even safe at school.
I've completely avoided this trip since then, yeah.
This body camera video worn by law enforcement shows the chaos and horror of the shooting.
Seeing all of this senseless violence happening does take a toll on you, but the American people are strong, and this is just a trial for them.
From foreign students to longtime Las Vegas residents, many of those on campus say the violence could have been avoided.
Hey, you guys, get down!
You know, in America, like, it's very easy to purchase firearms, and because of that, the number of casualties can climb real quick in a number of hours.
Yeah, I think the government definitely should change some of the laws about the gun control, because I don't think individuals should own any type of assault weapon, like a rifle, shotgun. Those weapons are made for wars. It's not something like individuals should have in their house. Like, you don't need a, like an AK-47 to defend yourself. Like, all you need to do is like a handgun.
Michael Deegan is a gun owner.
They need to have background checks. They need to make sure that you're confident to carry a weapon. I feel that the hotels and casinos may have to make changes now on how they're checking in their baggage.
Rodrigo Martinez works for a food delivery service and has to go to the casinos. He says his approach to his surroundings has changed.
Very cautious. I'm going to casinos and the strip. Don't want to be there too long now. So
Vegas is like one of the biggest tourist city. And this actually definitely going to change some people's view on Las Vegas.
But what strikes them is the generosity of the residents here when tragedy hits.
Because of this event, it brought people together, all the citizens. Even there's people like donating blood, money, water.
In the midst of this tragedy, these students say they have a deeper appreciation for the city where they study and work. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Las Vegas.
And later in the program, we'll hear from Nikki Strong, our country music expert, about the impact all of this has had on performers at the Route 91 Musical Festival. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Savor the flavor of African music. I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This is VOA's International Edition. President Trump is likely to decertify the nuclear deal with Iran and turn it back to the U.S. Congress for possible renewed sanctions. Lawmakers would have 60 days to decide whether to reimpose sanctions that were suspended under the agreement. Mr. Trump is expected to announce his plans in a speech next week in which he would say the agreement is not in the U.S. national interest. Iran has so far been in compliance with the agreement, but President Trump has been fiercely critical of the agreement, which he says is a one-sided deal that gives Iran all the advantages.
We must not allow Iran to obtain nuclear weapons. The Iranian regime supports terrorism and exports violence, bloodshed, and chaos across the Middle East. That is why we must put an end to Iran's continued aggression and nuclear ambitions. They have not lived up to the spirit of their agreement.
Iran signed the agreement with the Obama administration in 2015, along with Britain, China, France, Germany, and Russia. It primarily calls on Iran to curb its uranium enrichment program so it cannot build a nuclear weapon. In exchange, the U.S. and its allies would lift many of the sanctions that had wrecked the Iranian economy. VOA's Lori London gets some perspective on all of this and on the impending decision by Mr. Trump in her conversation with Kelsey Davenport, Director for Nonproliferation Policies at the Arms Control Association.
Well, President Trump is playing a very dangerous game. Withholding certification is extremely risky, in part because Iran is complying with its commitments under the nuclear deal. The Trump administration, Secretary of State Tillerson, they've conceded that. Now, what Trump might do is withhold certification by saying the agreement is no longer in the U.S. national security interest. But that also does not make sense because just this week, U.S. Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis said that the deal is in the U.S. national security interest. So what Trump might be trying to do is destabilize the agreement to try and pressure Iran to negotiate a quote-unquote better deal. But this is an extremely risky strategy because Iran opposes it, Washington's negotiating partners oppose it, and it could end up unraveling the deal.
When he says it's not in U.S. interests, what do you think he means by that?
Well, President Trump and other members of his administration have been very critical of the agreement by saying that it's failed to meet goals it was never intended to achieve. So they fault the agreement for not addressing Iran's aggressive behavior in the region or Iran's ballistic missiles. But all of these activities are outside the scope of the deal. So that's one reason why President Trump says that this deal is not in U.S. national security interest because it hasn't solved the issue that he has with the Iranian regime. But no deal is going to do that. And if the United States risks the nuclear deal with Iran, then every problem that Washington has with Iran is going to be made much worse.
Well, what about the fact that he's talking about launching a congressional review and basically throwing it into the hands of Congress?
Well, according to U.S. law, if the president withholds certification, then the U.S. Congress has a period of time in which they can introduce legislation that reimposes sanctions that were waived under the nuclear agreement. If Congress chooses to do that, and that's a big if, because Congress does not have to reimpose sanctions, that would be a clear violation of the nuclear agreement, and it could push Iran to decide to cease implementing its own restrictions. So that, again, would result in unwinding the deal.
So as someone who, you know, is heavily involved in the whole issue of nuclear weapons around the world, how much more concerned are you now, given the situation as tense as it is with North Korea and now potentially possibly intensifying the situation with Iran?
The United States and the international community cannot afford two nuclear crises. And right now, the threat from North Korea is growing, and focus should be squarely on how to confront that threat. Risking the Iran deal, especially if the United States takes action to undermine the deal, which withholding certification will do, Washington risks isolating itself. It risks the deal falling apart and Iran resuming troublesome nuclear activities and a second nuclear crisis emerging. This also undercuts Washington's ability to negotiate any future agreement with Iran or any agreement with North Korea and isolates the United States from important partners like the European Union, Russia, and China. So really, it's the United States that stands to lose because of this action.
Is this going against what the president's secretary of state and some of the people that he has in his or some of his closest advisors that are, you know, current or former military people? Do you have any idea if are they all on the same page with this?
Well, it isn't clear where all of the administration officials stand specifically on the deal. But when Trump had to last issue the certification to Congress that Iran was meeting its commitments under the deal in July, he nearly decided not to, but was urged to by his cabinet, particularly Tillerson, Mattis, and National Security Advisor McMaster. So clearly there are some voices in the administration that understand that the U.S. approach to Iran becomes much more complicated if there is an existential threat of an Iranian nuclear weapon, and that's what could happen if the deal falls apart. So it's difficult to say where the chips fall in Trump's cabinet, but certainly Mattis has said that the deal is in national security interests, and that's what Trump should be listening to right now.
That's Kelsey Davenport. She is the director for nonproliferation policy at the Arms Control Association, and she was speaking with my colleague, Lori London.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, managing editor of VOA News. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has warned that his country will close its border with Iraqi Kurdistan as part of new sanctions following an independence vote by the Iraqi Kurds earlier this month. That announcement follows Erdogan's visit this week to Tehran. We get more now from Dorian Jones in Istanbul.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan stepped up pressure on Iraqi Kurds following their independence vote, warning tough new measures will be introduced against Iraqi Kurdistan.
Ne yapacaksın? Nereye gideceksin?
All airspaces will be closed. Nasıl the flights çıkacaksın? Already are suspended. Buyurun, who will come? How will you go? Soon the borders will also be closed. How will you be able to exit and enter? Erdogan said to a meeting in Ankara. The Turkish president said the planned new measures would be coordinated with Baghdad and Tehran, but he gave no timetable on their introduction, other than saying it would be soon. The Iraqi Kurdish independence referendum earlier this month, in which Kurds voted more than 92% in favour, has been strongly condemned by Baghdad, Ankara and Tehran, all of which claim that independence would create regional instability. Ankara also fears Iraqi Kurdish independence would fuel secessionist demands from its own restive Kurdish minority. Erdogan claimed Thursday the Iraqi Kurdish independence was part of a wider conspiracy against his country.
Bundan sonrası beni çok da ilgilendirmiyor.
The encircling is not just limited to our physical borders. I'm talking about a bigger plot, including our territory. We will spoil that plot as we have spoiled others, with God's will and my nation's strength, Erdogan said. Ankara fears that Syrian Kurds on its border also have secessionist aspirations. Erdogan on Thursday, while travelling back from Tehran, said a decision to ban Iraqi Kurdish energy exports would be coordinated with Tehran and Baghdad. Iraqi Kurds export about 500,000 barrels of oil daily through a Turkish pipeline to world markets, which provides crucial financial support. If Ankara did close the pipeline, it could risk Moscow's displeasure, with a Russian oil company having major investments in Iraqi Kurdistan. But Erdogan appeared to play down such concerns, saying Russian President Vladimir Putin would be happy with any oil export embargo, because it would increase oil prices. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
This is VOA.
This is BizBeat.
A tiny little transparent lobster at the Hobart Institute for Marine and Antarctic Studies in Tasmania is a historical breakthrough for scientists who have discovered a way to farm rock lobsters. University of Tasmania professor Bridget Haywood.
The fact that we can now produce lobster in a closed-loop system on land without having to increasingly remove organisms from the wild in order to satisfy demand, that's the moment in history.
Professor Greg Smith, also with the University of Tasmania, says they were able to raise lobsters from the larvae stage to adults, a process under research for decades.
Everyone has been able to do it at a very small scale, in benchtop scale. No one's been able to actually go to the next step and actually take it to commercial size scale.
Construction of a lobster hatchery in Hobart is scheduled within 4 years. For VOA's BizBeat, I'm Philip Alexio.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us. Well, as I promised earlier, Nikki Strong of VOA Music joins us now with my colleague Cyril Williams to talk about this week's massacre in Las Vegas at the Route 91 Music Festival and the impact that had on the performers.
Nikki, how are many of the country artists doing? Jason Aldean in particular was on stage when it happened.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think everybody is still in shock. He, along with the band and other artists that night, had to take cover backstage. Chris Young was another artist on the lineup, and he said he was on the floor of a trailer behind the stage for hours. And wow. He said just hearing the gunshots and knowing people were being killed, it was horrifying. It was a very traumatic experience for everybody involved. I think people who were there and people who weren't. Jason Aldean, he released a statement expressing his anguish and his heartache and fear about how the world is changing and becoming more dangerous to live in, especially for him as a father raising children, and the need for us to come together as human beings, and that the differences that we have are not worth our lives, that we need to stand together as one. And he also canceled several of his upcoming shows out of respect for the victims and fans and families. And I think also to provide himself and others with time to mourn. And so, as we know, country music is like one big family. And so everybody is really just trying to process and heal.
Many are using music as a way to heal.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's interesting. The day after the shooting, the city of Nashville, the Country Music Association, and the Nashville Convention Visitors Corporation, they hosted a candlelight vigil where artists came, like Keith Urban, Vince Gill, and Amy Grant, among others, where they shared words and they prayed and they performed tribute to the victims to really kind of help the healing process. And Maren Morris is another artist. She performed at the Route 91 Festival a day or two before. So you talk about there, but the grace of God go I. And then she released a song called Dear Hate. Now, she said she wrote this song 3 years ago, but the shooting compelled her to release it. And the lyrics actually start with, "Dear Hate, I saw you on the news today like a shock that takes my breath away." And all of the proceeds go to the Music City Cares Fund, which was established to help the victims and families of the Las Vegas shooting. Other artists continue to speak out. Garth Brooks did a Facebook Live with fans offering encouragement and support. Many are pledging their commitment to performing and not being defeated. Others are performing tributes, sharing their thoughts. Dirks Bentley donated blood.
For him.
Yes, exactly. So mostly people are talking and trying to comfort one another and figuring out what to do to make a difference.
Are any artists talking about gun control legislation?
Now, this is interesting. This is major for country music because it's causing country to really take a look at that, because country music is very pro-gun. It runs deep, so much so that the National Rifle Association has a partnership with the Nashville music scene called NRA Country. So that shows how deep it goes. And I understand a lot of people, they feel like everybody has a right to bear arms. And in that, it's also a discouragement against crime. So if I'm thinking about doing something bad to you, if I think you might have a gun, you know, that can deter crime. There are many levels for reasons why people are pro-gun. But people are reconsidering. And one artist in particular, he's a guitarist. He's with the Josh Abbott Band. And he was there at the shooting. And he believes hardcore in the right to bear arms. But he, along with other members of the band and the crew, they're all licensed to carry concealed weapons, and they travel with legal firearms on tour. But he said their guns were useless against a man firing into a crowd from a distant hotel room. And he released a statement that's very powerful. Part of it says, "We couldn't touch them," meaning their guns, "for fear police might think we were part of the massacre and shoot us. A small group or one man laid waste to a city with dedicated, fearless police officers desperately trying to help because of access to an insane amount of firepower." He went on to write, "Writing my parents and the love of my life as a goodbye last night and a living will, because I felt like I wasn't going to live through the night, was enough for me to realize that this is completely and totally out of hand. These rounds were powerful enough that my crew guys, just standing in close proximity of a victim shot by this guy, or coward, he says, received shrapnel wounds." And his experience at that festival, in the midst of that shooting, made him say, "We need gun control now." So this incident is making country music, the community as a whole, say, what kind of world do we want to live in? And what do we need to do to create that world? So I think it's going to cause some real soul searching in regards to this issue. Like, how can we be pro-gun, but also have gun control that makes sense and helps protect us?
You can find out more about country music, its artists, and country on VOA1's Country Hits with Nikki Strong. You can also reach Nikki on Twitter and Facebook at VOA1 The Hits. Thanks a lot, Nikki.
You're welcome.
Dear Hate, I saw you on the news today, like a shark that takes my breath away. You fall like rain, cover us in drops of pain. I'm afraid that we just might drown. Dear hey, well, you sure are colorblind. Your kiss is the cruelest kind. You could poison any mind. Just look at mine. Don't know how this world keeps spinning round and round.
No doubt a powerful song from Maren Morris. Many thanks, everyone, for joining us here on The Voice of America for International Edition. It's always good to have you with us. A reminder, the top world news is straight ahead, and we hope you'll stay tuned. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Zainab Abdul-Rahman, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. We hope you have a super Friday. Now a bit more from Maren Morris.
Love is gonna conquer all. Dear hate, you were smiling from that Selma bridge in Dallas when that bullet hit and Jackie cried. You pulled those towers from the sky, but even on our darkest night, the world keeps spinning round. You were there in the garden, like a snake in the grass. I see you in the morning, staring through the looking glass. You whisper down through history and echo through these halls. But I hate to tell you, love's gonna conquer all.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
Under its Rewards for Justice program, the U.S. State Department is offering up to $3 million for information leading to the location, arrest, and/or conviction of a key ISIL operative, Gulmurad Halimov. Halimov was born in Tajikistan in 1975 and is a former Tajik Special Operations Colonel, police commander, and military sniper. He was once the commander of a police special operations unit in the Ministry of Interior of Tajikistan. He is now a member of ISIL, or Daesh, as it is called in Arabic, and an ISIL recruiter. In May 2015, he announced in a 10-minute propaganda video that he fights for the terrorist group, and he has called publicly for violent acts against the United States, Russia, and Tajikistan. The United States designated Halimov a specially designated global terrorist in September 2015. He was also sanctioned by the United Nations as a terrorist in February 2016. He is wanted by the government of Tajikistan. In June 2015, Interpol issued a red notice for Halimov, alerting member nations that he is a wanted person and should be apprehended for extradition to Tajikistan. Since its inception in 1984, the Rewards for Justice program has paid in excess of $125 million to more than 80 people who provided actionable information that helped bring terrorists to justice or prevented acts of international terrorism worldwide. If you have information on Gulmurad Halimov, contact the Rewards for Justice office via the website at rewardsforjustice.net. Email at info@rewardsforjustice.net, phone at 1-800-877-3927, or mail at Rewards for Justice, Washington, D.C., 20520-0303, USA. All information will be kept strictly confidential.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.